I can use freight instead of Echolink. Let me know in the next transmission which one is better. So yes, Alinco is an established name. So we're talking about Chinese crap, which I'm against mostly. I understand that everybody wants to have a piece of pie, but crap is crap. So Alinco has an established name. They have a radio that costs $124.95. It's a dual bonder. And they try to put in it something that may make that radio sell. So they say AI. Okay, we have AI noise canceling. And then they say we have ability to see a frequency at which the radio is at. So it's a frequency counter. But the frequency counter is known since, 1932? Nothing new. And you have to be on a frequency in order to see the frequency. BS. But anyhow, it's new. It's Alinco DJW70T. Again, Alinco DJW70T, and it's established name. Let me drop. Okay. So then I have another email. I sent you email. It says, I'm confused. Pixie against whom? So there is an individual that is called Cap Kirk 2021. Okay, mostly I can like a nickname on some sort of social media. So Captain Kirk. And I was Googling for it and I found on readit.com, but it didn't allow me to get in it. It locked me, this page, and it says I'm retired military, USAF. If I had a choice, I would have joined the Space Force, but anyhow. And then it says that the FCC had a problem with the gentleman, and he went to court, and the FCC was trying to build the case against him, but the judge stopped it. And it says in the screenshot that I sent you, unvisible delay and packet veto of my application without conducting character review of state felony manslaughter conviction. But anyhow, the FCC is attempting to deny my application without any evidentiary hearing and as required under the APA, whatever. So, and then there is a comment of another guy who says about him being convicted to a felon. And I'm kind of lost. What the heck is this about? Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. I mean, this is not the proper place, not here on the technical net either. But, you know, on a Reddit page is not a proper place to kind of deal claims. If he feels that he has a legal issue, he should hire a lawyer and sue the FCC. And, you know, lots of luck. You know, it's the old adage of not really being able to sue the city hall. But he's free to try it. But, you know, I don't know who he is. I don't know if he's a crank. I don't know if he's a non-existent person. I have no idea what the hell any of this is, except, you know, like a lot of stuff on the internet, it turns out to ultimately be nonsense.
Okay, anyhow, for anybody who is interested with that, there is a video, and video name is Ham Radios Could Cause Airplanes to Crash, Short Format Amateur Radio Call Signs, and the FCC Gets Sued. Okay, that's the title. But because it is difficult to memorize the title if somebody who is interested go to, oh gosh, that's not this one. This one probably. Okay, yeah. This one open up in the new tab. Okay. No. But anyhow, I didn't put the right YouTube address. The title again, if somebody's interested, let me drop.
It's a title to the Raw YouTube?
Yeah, it is a title to the YouTube, but that YouTube is handled by a ham radio operator. So the guy has like 200,000 of subscribers. So the ham radios could cause airplanes to crash. Short format amateur radio call signs and the FCC gets sued. That's the title. So if you put just a few words, ham radios could cause airplanes to crash, you should get a dead video on YouTube. But anyhow, there is another, in the same YouTube, it is a note that 250 short forward lines call signs are available in the FCC if somebody is interested. Getting a variety call sign, and they are available immediately. And another information from the same video is ham radios could cause airplane crash. And that was for me too much. But anyhow, I have an article that I read, and maybe you had a time to look at it, Dr. Roy. Back to you.
Not quite sure what you're alluding to. This particular guy, I don't know. I don't know what to make of him. It sounds like the most obvious version of a guy who paid bots to falsely subscribe to his YouTube page. At the end of the presentation, he says something like, "I'll do this again. If anyone really cares about this stuff, I'll do it again." With that type of enthusiasm, how could you possibly not, be infected by it? So I don't know what this guy's story is, but I assume that the easiest solution to what he is a guy who paid the Chinese to just fake subscribe with bots for his channel. Because otherwise, he has the enthusiasm of a guy who's just about to fall asleep. George, is that you out there? You're about 20 dB down. Something's wrong there. Check your microphone, check your settings, because I can just barely hear you.
Okay, the channel is by Nota, N-O-T-A, Rubicon Production. And it's the guy close to 300,000 subscribers. Back to you.
Fine, but again, usually people with that many real subscribers don't have a kind of general ennui during their presentation. He didn't interest me in the slightest. I mean, he's telling weird, non-connected stories, and then at the end he says, "If anyone actually likes this, I'll do it again sometime." Thank you for your time. You're still 20 dB plus down, George. Well, hopefully George will fix whatever is going on with his microphone. Wesley, do you have anything else?
Yes, I do. So I sent you that video. That video is at the very bottom on it, and my comment on that image, all of those revelations sounds to me somehow like a clickbait. looks like we have a similar opinion about it. The only thing is that the guy is mentioning that ham radio can cause crash of the airplanes. And I found the article he was referencing to United States Airlines being landed. Radio interface has resulted in U.S. airlines being landed with an $8 million bill to fix faulty equipment on Boeing 777. It has nothing to do with ham radio. It's a faulty equipment. So, anyhow, let me go to the next one. Russian competitors to the Starlink, and this is RASVET. So, we have a Starlink, right? Let me drop. Okay. So we have a Starlink, and now Russian, fighting already 50 years with Ukraine, they decided that they don't want to depend on Starlink, access to the Starlink from Mr. Elon Musk, and they put 16 satellites on themselves, and they are low orbit satellites. So I'm gonna read that part. Hold on. Not this one. Not this one. Scientists said, yeah, that's antiprotons. 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 Okay, so Russia has launched the first 16 satellites of its RASVET internet constellation, and projects seen as a potential challenger to SpaceX Starlink. The deployment marks early setup in building satellite-based internet network aimed at expanding connectivity and competing with growing global space communication sector and whatsoever. So in other words, is they are trying to have, for probably for the perspective of the war against the Ukraine, something that would give them the same advantage like Ukraine has have right now with Starlink. But interesting is that Russians do it. And there's a need for 200 plus satellites to have Russia fully under the network of those satellites, low orbit satellites. The only thing is that right now Russia is blocking even the YouTube. So what are you going to use it for? Back to you.
1 second, Wesley. George, are you calling your name out there?
Yes, I changed microphones. Do you have a copy now?
Yes, you are much, 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 much better.
Thank you, Roy. I want to comment. I was trying to come in on the last topic. And if ham radio operators are interfering with air traffic, there is a problem because we can't be. Because transoceanic air traffic is on HF, very close to a lot of the frequencies that we're permitted to work. So somebody who was writing or posting that information, I think, I don't know whether it was written or YouTube or whatever, they don't know what they're doing.
I agree with you entirely, and even Wes mentioned that he went back to a source article and had nothing to do with amateur radio.
Sorry, I was running for another microphone as you were wrapping it up. KD2FIU, all clear.
Toby, though. Thank you, George, as always. Wesley, do you believe anything that Russia said?
Well, yes, those satellites were launched. So definitely they are building their own constellation. That's given. And you can simply Google that information Oh, I actually found it. The first batch of 16 satellites was launched on March 23rd, 2026, marking the beginning of Operation Now development. The project aimed to eventually deploy over 900 low-orbit satellites by 2026, with commercial applications expected to start in coming year. RASNET, or RASNET, whatever they call it, RASBS, whatever they call it, I don't care, is designed to compete with Starlink, which has over 9,000 active satellites globally and aims to provide reliable internet access in underserved areas of Russia. Okay, so that's what we have back to.
Okay, fine. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't believe anything that Russia said. They're all liars. They're pretty much sociopaths at this point, and they're actually losing their war. I remember there was a great line earlier when Ukraine was invading Russia, that the Russian army used to be the second most powerful armed forces in the world. Now they're the second most powerful armed force in Russia. Ukraine was the first. I don't believe anything they say. They're in a bit of an embarrassed position. Elon turned off their Starlink, and they absolutely have nothing to replace it with. They've been running Wi-Fi devices into Ukraine and having them blown up by drones. They're a joke now. They're a farce. They can't support their friends, their allies. One after another has kind of dropped dead, and Russia just fiddles with their thumbs and say that they're winning every day. Well, apparently, they're going to be shutting down most of the internet for all their citizens in a couple of days, I understand, because their adage is you have to use the new KGB's application called Max, which will spy on everything you do and say, or you can't have the internet. So, so be it. They made their own hell. Now they get to live in it.
Absolutely agree with you. Absolutely. So we're dealing with a scared to death regime that is not doing well. They went to Ukraine promising Kiev in 3 days. Kiev is the capital of Ukraine, and they fight already 5 years trying to take Kiev in 3 days. And they lost about 1.5 million soldiers, and those soldiers are paid. So that means they pay them 200,000 rubles, which comes to $2,000. $2,000 for becoming permanently disabled with no hands, no legs, and whatsoever, or killed. But there are still people who want to. But if they don't want to, they do everything to make them to be on the front. So let's say you were drunk but while driving, and before you got sober, they put you into the jail and ask you to sign the paper, and actually you sign your agreement that you're going to the war. So. But anyhow, we're not talking about that. We have another subject, liquid crystal motor, but we have also another subject, and that's the last one, which is transportation of antiprotons. Which one you want me to start from?
Well, I guess do the first one first. I don't think you sent me traveling protons.
No, I didn't. That was the last thing that I simply recalled that I saw, and I didn't send you that email. But anyhow, liquid crystal motor. Well, first, what is liquid crystal? So we could have a crystal in the represent state of matter, and has property between those of conventional liquids and those of solid crystals. So we could take it as an example. Liquid crystal can flow like a liquid, but its molecules may be oriented in the common direction as in salt. So all of those ferrofluids could use liquid crystals. And the reason that I got into it is that the video that I sent you talks about new alien motor revealed ferroelectric prototype. And in that video, they say it's right, that in comparison to a typical electrostatic motor, there's a 2,000 times more torque. When instead of the electrostatic motor having air inside, you just use fluid, which is fluid, which is the electric fluid in it. But anyhow, that's the story. So I'm not gonna take more of the time. It's just that we have right now new forms of motors. One of them could be PCB in form of disc, and you have a stackable number of discs, and you have a coil on the disc, on the PCB, printed, and that would be one form of the motor, a motor that is electrostatic motor, doesn't use magnets at all, and the other one is the one that I was just talking about. Mike, back to you.
Okay, KC2GS. I don't like when people put in their title things like alien. That's just hype. I mean, it's obvious hype. It has subjects in the very slightest. And unfortunately, these type of motors, although they do exist, presently they're not scalable. They're very good for precision movements for very small objects. You can't scale them up. We've talked before. I started the technical mess tonight about how apparently quantum computers might not be scalable. We talked in the past that the generative transform artificial intelligent algorithms can't be scaled up forever. And I think the case is also for this type of motor that it's interesting for small precision motors. Liquid crystals are something we've lived with for more than 40 years. Around with the subject when I was in high school. It's basically the way that most of us see liquid crystals in action is that they can polarize light. A small voltage differential across it will make the crystals align and become polarized, and if you have a polarizing filter in front of it or behind it, if it's a 90-degree difference, it blocks light and those kind of gray-green liquid crystal displays that you've seen on clocks and all kinds of things for the last 40 years is basically how liquid crystal displays the primary use. The motors, I think for every million liquid crystal displays, there might be maybe a liquid crystal motor being poked around in a laboratory. So interesting technology, probably not scalable, and the site uses much too much hyperbole for my taste. It's clickbait. Again, a lot of YouTube, even legitimate YouTube, uses clickbait because they feel that they're not going to make a living otherwise. So unfortunately, we have to suffer through this nonsense.
There is something interesting, and to actually There was discovery of polar pneumatic liquid crystals in 2017, and that enabled creation of ferroelectric fluids that can generate transverse electrostatic forces, and that is being called TEF. Without the need of magnets or high voltages. So we're talking about some variation that happened in 2017. This allows design of lightweight magnet-free motors, which can be used in various applications, including soft robots, I'm reading right now, and micro-mechanical systems, MEMS, the use of ferroelectric pneumatic, NEMATIC, liquid crystals in those motors has been demonstrated to achieve a strong TEF, previously thought unattainable in conventional electrostatics, enabling the generation of substantial mechanical stress under modest voltages. So that's probably the only revelation that we have in that subject.
Okay, but again, all this technology almost always takes, 20, 30 years to go from the lab to everyone using it. Lithium-based recharges were discovered, I think, in the 1980s. And, we didn't get to play with them for 20 years. That's the nature of things. So I wish them well. They'll continue tinkering with it. And if it ever comes to something, we can discuss it here. But, I don't think it's going to happen overnight.
Okay. And the last subject for today is scientists at CERN have successfully transported antiprotons in the track for the first time. And those was 92 antiprotons across labs. I didn't send you that, I'm sorry. If you have some information, please. I was mainly interested in how to store antiprotons. How to store antiprotons, I know. But how do they store antiprotons? And then could we store another antiparticles and transport particles? And then what about antineutron? Do we have antineutron? Of course we have, but anyhow, that's another aspect. Can anti-electron be stored, and so on? Back to you, Antoine.
There's a big difference between storing it and conveying it. You might be able to get it from one end of the lab to the other end, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you could keep it in a bottle for a couple of weeks. So my guess would be that they didn't store it, that they simply found a means to stably convey it from one place to another place that wasn't this very far distance away.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you remember. It's not the new device. It's a Penning trap, P-E-N-N-I-N-G, Penning trap. And Penning trap is used in physics to store charged particles and electrons, and then decided they want to use it for antimatter. So, if you could say a few words about it, back to you.
Okay, I don't really know what the specifications are. Again, I would be amazed if this is a long-term storage device. You can kind of have electrostatically levitated antiparticles, I guess, contained for a while, but ultimately, unless you keep them at 0 degrees Kelvin or close to that, just random thermal noise will probably knock them against something, and then you'll have antimatter annihilation.
Okay, so in regards to Penny Trump, I'm not sure, but this is not a new stuff. It was known probably before Second World War. I didn't check, so I cannot stand on it. But it employs quadruple electric fields to confine particles, actually, and a homogeneous magnetic field to confine them radially. And that's sort of set up allows a precise measurement of properties like a charge-to-mass ratio, and it is used in labs, including CERN. That's mostly right now for studying antimatter and conducting experiments in quantum information processing. So when we're talking about quantum computer, that's exactly what they use, Penny Trapp. Somebody who wants to go deeper into it, Penny Trapp, spelled P-E-N-N-I-N-G, again, P-E-N-N-I-N-G, Trapp. Dr. Ray, back to you.
Yes?
Most recently, in March 2026, they took them 5 to 10 kilometers, and they all survived, according to my search. These guys at CERN did.
Oh, very good. Also, I've been looking it up. Reports of they've been able to store these particles for over 400 days, which is pretty good. It requires an ultra-high vacuum and uses magnetic and electric fields as well. So it must be an interesting-looking device.
Yeah, okay. So then we have, can anti-proton be stored? And, of course, yes. It can be stored in Penny Trapp again. And again, it's the same mechanism, magnetic and electric fields to suspend antimatter in a vacuum from touching any ordinary matter. And that's probably how they built the device to transport that. I'm not a chemist. I don't know how they did it, but I believe there was not pure physics. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Okay, so an interesting device. It doesn't hold a lot of particles, but then the ARC technology to produce particles is a very small number, so that's suitable for the purpose. So, yeah, there is a means to immobilize charged particles. I would tend to guess that you could not use this type of device, although I don't think you could use this type of device to work on a neutron because they're not charged, so you couldn't suspend it in an electromagnetic field.
Yeah, well, first we have to, you're absolutely right. That's what puzzles me. Because when we're talking about antiparticles of the neutron, yes, we do have antineutron. And although a neutron doesn't have a charge, it is composed of antiquark. So we're talking about antineutron. One up antiquark and two down antiquarks, differing from the neutron, which consists of quarks. At least I understand it this way. So it has the same mass as the neutron, but it has a baryon number of one, I believe, indicating that it is made minus one, right? Indicating that it's made from antiquarks. So antineutron wasn't known. It is not that we know it for a long time. Some people here listening to us are older than the knowledge. So 1956, if I remember correctly, but I believe I'm right, antineutron was first produced through the annihilation of antiprotons with matter. Back to you, Dr.
Okay, yeah, antineutrons are made up of two down anti-quarks and a up anti-quark. It has charged particles within them. Up and down quarks have charge, but the total of two down and one up equals a charge of zero. So the composite charge of the neutron is zero, but internally there are internal charges acting inside of the three quarks that make up the neutron.
Yeah, but as far as confining anti-neutron, I'm not sure how they can do it. Probably they couldn't.
Yeah, that's my thought. That they, I looked up the Penning trap, and they mentioned antiprotons and protons. They don't mention anything about neutrons. So my assumption is because you are required to have an electric and magnetic field for a particle to work, a neutron or antineutron would fail to be suspended. It wouldn't be attracted through the electromagnetic field and allowed to be suspended within the trap.
Okay, so my understanding is that if at CERN they had a Penning trap on wheels and that was able to hold antiparticles in the high vacuum, so they were in need to have a high vacuum, but they were in need to confine them in such a way that they don't touch any other matter. Unbelievable. We have a year 2026. And some things we never heard of 10 years ago. Where are we going, Dr. Wright?
Well, that's the beauty of it. We don't really know for sure. That's why predicting the future is not a very successful hobby. You don't quite know what kind of eureka moments scientists are having as we talk. It could change the very aspects of our lives. You know, the Japanese gentleman who discovered how to dope semiconductors to produce LEDs that emitted blue light. That invention, although the guy got next to nothing out of it, made, I think, Nichia Labs billions of dollars. And, probably happens in the middle of the night someplace. So, who knows? That's the beauty of it. If you sleep too late tomorrow, you'll miss a revolutionary discovery.
Okay, into exchange. So, summary. We have vacuum storage. We have antiprotons. They are suspended in a vacuum using magnetic and electric fields to prevent contact with container walls. But they use for it bottles. At least the word bottles was found by me when I Googled for how they did it. How they do it. Whatever. So, we know that single contact with matter, can I don't know if I probably pronounce the word annihilate. Okay, I need your help with it. Annihilate antiproton. Then we have a penny trap, which is a key device used to store antiprotons, and it holds charged particles like antiprotons, because proton is positive charge, right? It has positive charge. So that would be combination of strong magnetic fields and electric fields. They are not necessarily negative, because then if negative, then we're going to have a conflict. They are not positive, so they have to have a certain balance. Unbelievable. Back to you.
I'm not quite what you said, but anti-protons are negatively charged because protons are positively charged and antiparticles are the electrical charge. So an antiproton is negatively charged like an electron because a positron is a positively charged electron-like particle.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I wasn't clear with what I was saying. You're absolutely right. Antiprotons are cooled to, if I remember correctly, it was 8.2 Kelvin. So my chamber that I have can go to 4 Kelvin, but actually can go to 2 Kelvin. It's supposed to go to 3.8, 3.6, but it goes to 4 Kelvin. Now here we need only 8.2 Kelvin. To slow them down and prevent them from, how do you pronounce, annihilating victory?
It's annihilation or annihilating, annihilate, to make it go away. It ceases to exist. If you place a particle and an antiparticle together, they mutually annihilate, and all that's left is gamma radiation.
AG201.
Yes, David?
How are you, sir?
I am fine, David, and you?
Sir, I can't complain. The weather's nice. Windows open, it's really relaxing. I was listening for a while to the conversation. And, I don't know how this would fit in to what you're saying, but I think it's pretty... opinion. People are opinionated. They have all kinds of opinions. Opinion is not fact. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, although you dropped out for a little while from the repeater, yes, I understand. Opinions are not facts. I've often kind of said you have a right to your opinion, but you don't have a right to your own personal facts.
Yeah, and some people, they have opinions about their opinions.
Yeah, I'm sure you could go redundantly loop-de-loop with that kind of thought.
QSL. But, you know, if you look at the news, you look at social media, look at TV, you know, it's mostly opinions, not facts.
Well, unfortunately, it's not even opinions. It's fake facts. It's facts that people kind of just throw together out of nothingness without any particular proof because it tends to quiet the other side for a few minutes.
QSL, I also think that opinions can be toxic.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's lots of opinions, both legitimate and illegitimate, that can be very upsetting. You hear it... in interviews and podcasts and all over the place every single time of the day. It's very common. Nowadays, you have to have emotional impact to earn the people's busy time. So that's why the hyperbole, that's why the overstatement, that's why the emotional energy is unfortunately injected into every comment around. So it can be very tiresome, following some people into their strange little theories.
Yes, sir. And people also very, very busy running around in circles trying to get what they think that they're wrong. And a lot of frustration, anger, conflicts come out of that.
Yeah, but it also pays the bills for the ad agencies, which is the most important thing when it comes to the ad agencies themselves.
Sure, and also all the providers
for internet and all of the social media channels and any kind of news media, and people want to know, and they're willing to accept the opinion.
Samarans, we also unfortunately have developed little walled communities. In the old days, you know, there were only three major networks. You either watched ABC, NBC, or CBS. Now everything has been fragmented and time served so that, you know, you could have a pool of basically just two people. And those two people agree with each other completely and never talk to anyone else. So, yeah, there's a lot of entrapped opinions that just bounce back and forth between a relatively small number of people who believe their set of facts.
QSL, try some, buy some. People using their imagination to sell products and services.
Yeah. Well, it's the old adage that, probably racist to say this one, but it's the old adage that anyone can sell you a freezer. Only a great salesman can sell an Eskimo a freezer.
QSL. And a great Eskimo can sell his whole nation a bunch of freezers, even though they might not need it.
I guess I'm unaware of the actual economics involved in refrigerators these days.
Well, you know, somebody tried to sell you something, you have no choice but to buy.
No, it depends. If they don't give me a reason, then I'm certainly not going to provide one, you know, unless I get a cut of the deal.
Yeah, but in a free society, capitalist society, you know, these companies would do anything to make you buy, even if it's giving you their opinion.
Well, certainly they'll give you their opinion. Yeah, that's the easiest thing to do. But you know, fortunately, there's not too many situations where they actually threaten your life if you don't buy something. I mean, they basically just try to trick you into spending, to buying and spending more money than you need to spend for the product. Because they get a cut of it, and so it's a vested interest on their part to maximize their salary and, you know, how much money they walk away with. And the producer of the product gets his slice as well.
Well, you know, you walk into a big clothing store, you have your cell phone inside your pocket, and once you walk in the door, it rings, you pick it up, and there's an advertisement for the store. You know, already you have this idea in your mind, you know, I'm in this store, I have to buy something.
Yeah. David, I'm a little confused. We hadn't quite wrapped up Wesley, and I think Brian is waiting as well. So, unless it has something to do with any previous situation or comment that Wes had, you know, I could put you on the list if you want us to.
No. Go ahead. Have a fantastic night, and we'll talk again.
Okay. Very good, David. I'll talk to you down the line. Have a happy Passover.
I don't know how they say it in Hebrew, but happy Passover to you.
I can do Yiddish. Have a decent Pesach. Wesley, any other things tonight?
Actually, it's everything that I had for tonight. The only thing is that I said that paying Trump is nothing new. And I said that it was probably 1930s, and I was wrong, so I want to correct it. Mr. Penning was born in 1894, and he died in 1953. So I believe his invention for the penning trap was somewhere in 1922. That probably, but anyhow, it's nothing new for. How enormously fast everything is going right now. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant one. And to experience.
Thank you, Wes. Likewise, thank you for participating. Brian, are you still with us?
I am. I've been patiently waiting, and I don't know what to talk about tonight, actually.
Okay, well, it's not inherently necessary. I just made the assumption that you had something on your mind, but if you want to pass, that's okay. Everyone's free to pass if they don't have anything.
Oh, I do have one thing.
Okay.
This week, there were contests worldwide, but I'm curious to know what body sanctions this kind of worldwide contest. Is it the ARRL and various other groups? Will they synchronize it? I'm just trying to get a better understanding about who is mandating that this DX contest for this weekend would take place.
Okay, that's an interesting question because as far as I can perceive, it's listed, it's titled as the CQ Worldwide DX Contest, which means that it was basically a contest thought up from CQ Magazine, which is defunct. The publisher missed a whole bunch of issues for the last 5-6 years, and unfortunately, I think passed away a year or two ago, and no one picked up the publication, so it simply ceased to exist. So despite the fact that the magazine that sponsored it originally, it still has the title, I assume that some third-party group of people got together and decided to keep it going. I don't know who they are. I'm sure if you research it, you'll find that there's some group of people who just got together and said, even though CQ Magazine is gone, we can maintain it and keep it going. So that's what they do. A lot of them are ARRL-affiliated contests. Some international contests are foreign amateur radio groups. You know, you could set up your own contest. I mean, I don't think there's a single organization that either approves or disapproves of contests. Most of them are on the weekend for obvious reasons, and, you know, they try not to schedule competing contests because that will lessen the chance of people joining their contest.
My question is, why can't they limit the bands that these take place on, or at least a certain segment of the band, because it is like the wild, wild west, and it is a new one.
Yeah, I have the same unfortunate problem. This particular worldwide contest was not quite that bad this morning, as people know, hopefully know by now. Sunday mornings, most Sunday mornings, I'm the control operator for the Kings County Radio Club 10-meter net. So I was a control operator, and there were a lot of active contesters on the 10-meter band. Unfortunately, that's the nature of contests. Unless they're a certain mode. If they're CW, then obviously you're not supposed to operate off of the CW portion of the band. But usually they either limited by mode or limited by number of the band of the meter, 10, 20, 30, 40 meters, it's a wild, wild west. And you either kind of operates between...
Didn't catch that part, Roy, just like you completely went out.
Okay. Basically, people operating contests give you bands, they give you modes, and they give you time. And unfortunately, it's wide open and crazy, depending upon the amount of activity. Some contests have not that many people, doing contests, so you can find gaps between their operating frequencies and have a regular QSO. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you just, you turn your radio off and you go away and you come back the next day when the contest is over.
What I really think it is, it's a monopolization of the spectrum, where people who want to have normal QSOs are extremely limited in doing so. And I wonder if the FCC should get involved to go ahead and have certain segments of each band available for contesting when they do it, because I don't think it's fair to a lot of other operators who don't participate in contests.
Well, this has been going on for a lot of years, and the situation is probably that there are more people who are motivated to be contesters than people want to operate out of a contest during a contest. So I think the FCC, and the FCC doesn't like to set regulations these days anyway. So you can certainly put it up to the FCC to tighten the regulations for contests. My guess would be you wouldn't get that much of a response from the FCC, and a lot of guys who are weekend contesters would be very angry.
Well, they have to be fair to people who don't contest as well. Because when you contest, all you're getting is a 5-9, which is an untrue signal. It's not always 5-9, far from it. And the other thing that you're getting is just a number. So maybe I don't see the point, really. I mean, you're not enjoying a QSO with the other person. It's just like to see who can make, contacts. It just seems so, infantile?
Well, you got to respect other people's feelings. Some people don't get a contest. Other people live for contests. They look forward to going to the back of, say, QSC and reading their name and their number of points that they have. And there are some people who wax poetic about contesting and DXing, whereas other people just feel that it's a glorified game of tag, elementary school. So, it depends on the individual. You and I are not contesters. I assume you're a rag chewer like myself. I like to talk to people and learn things about them and, get into a conversation. As opposed to, there are people who just want to play tag and then move on to the next one, and they count up their points, and they have a lot of points. So, congratulations. They might get wallpaper, a certificate from the contest. They can put it up on their wall, or they can put it in loose leaf findings and look through them, when they have nothing better to do. Different strokes for different folks. Just because you and I are rag chewers, that doesn't mean you can't give the opportunity for contesters to have a little fun themselves.
Okay. How do these people actually have valid confirmations to submit? Don't they have to have some sort of scheme where everything is, recorded properly and authorized, authenticated?
Yeah, it depends upon what year it was. Way back in the very beginning, you sent QSL cards, they sent you QSL cards, and that was your proof. Nowadays, there are databases. The QRZ has databases, the ARRL has databases, and you can take your You can take all your contacts off of your software and